on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, August 5th, 2024 edition, and markets are interesting, to say the least. We had a sell-off to close last week, and over the weekend, you know, foreign markets took it on the chin even worse than we did. So if you think there was a lot of red here, go look overseas. And this was our first major risk-off period of the year, really. And this is something, frankly, you should always expect. You should. In any given year, you should see a 10% pullback in equities. That's normal. That's average. That's garden variety. And this is no different. The catalyst may be different. Just like last year during the Silicon Valley Bank crisis, that was different. That's usually how this works. Usually the next crisis, the next problem, isn't like the last one. It's a different catalyst. In this case, it's two major central banks going in different directions, causing a big move in the currency pair, the dollar yen, and forced unwind, which forced short covering of the yen, for example. And they do that to by selling dollar denominated assets like equities. And then that sell off triggers other things. And that's kind of how these things work. Okay. And so a lot of this is market structure, and you have to ask yourself, you know, how much impact does it have on the economy, really? My answer is probably minimal both ways. Right? The Fed was already going to cut, and now they're more likely to cut, maybe a bit more. That would be obviously positive for credit expansion, which is already inflected positively. That would be good for the economy. Now, from a wealth effect standpoint, there's a lot of people who maybe were crowded into tech stocks. They're taking it on the chin. Maybe they have Bitcoin exposure. They're taking it on the chin. So, you know, there's minor wealth effects, negative wealth effects there as well. So overall, it's more of a market structure story, it's just interesting story that reverberates around financial markets, but not really the real economy. And those are things you have to always ask yourself, is how much impact does this have on the overall economy? Because these events are common. They're normal. Now, the VIX spiking to 64 plus is not normal, but these things happen due to market structure. So that's where we're at. Gave you a quick rundown of what happened in markets today. I think a little early, but I kind of had to do that, right? Because we had such a momentous day, an interesting day in markets. And I'm sure a lot of you are wondering. Right. So hopefully I gave you a little insight, and the show is about that, about giving you that perspective. I'm not here to bang bells and whistles. I'm here to give you the facts. I'm here to help you understand markets, understand investing so that you're not confused. You know, people get fearful of what they don't understand. And so my job here is to help you understand what's happening in real time as effectively as I can. And then answering your questions around that. And that's what we do every day, is answer your finance and investment questions. So we're going to talk about the market performance for the day. I gave you a rundown of what happened in the market, but I'll get you some numbers in a little bit. We'll also look at the show topics we will hit. And then last, we're going to tackle our first caller question right now.
Hey, Justin. Hey, Luke. Long time listener, first time caller. Question about CDW. Been on my watch list for a little while. Had a little run up, deep drop recently. I feel like it's a good buy point. What do you think? Thank you.
All right. Looking at CDW, provide IT hardware and software solutions to customers in the US, UK, Canada. Here's the issue is growth is now negative. Last two quarters, revenues fell mid-single digits and earnings fell low to mid-single digits. So that's not good. And it's trading at about 22 times earnings. Even if you look based on forward-looking earnings, about 20 times. Am I going to pay that much for something that has negative growth expectations? This year, earnings are supposed to go up 1%, but those estimates are coming down. So I just don't get excited about this. They have a good balance sheet. They have pretty good cash flow, but and good profitability. I like that. But if you look at the multiples it's trading at, enterprise value either around 17 times, that's slightly above average from its history. And it's inflecting negatively in earnings. And then the technicals today just broke below the May lows and the July lows. So this looks, from a technical perspective, it wants to take that next leg lower, which frankly is probably the 200-week moving average, right around 187. That's at 206. So I still think there's another 10% drop from here before this gets interesting. And then I'd want to see those earnings estimates once again inflect positively as opposed to what they're doing now, which is analysts continue to bring those down for this year and next year. So I would keep on the sidelines. Interesting name, you know, good profitability, good cash flow. That's good. But timing-wise, not a great time at the moment. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes. And our main focus point is about the average 401k balance by age. Are you saving enough? So understanding how your retirement savings compare to others can provide valuable insights into your financial planning and where you're at in the process. And it varies significantly by age, by industry, also by your sex. Okay. So we'll talk about how to think about your 401k in different stages and how it reflects on your savings habits. We also are going to get into a few other topics. One is in regards to following the money. I see this a lot where people follow gurus, right? Oh, Warren Buffett did this, or this investor did that. And often that data is lagged. And so we'll look at whether that data has any predictive power. Okay, we'll look at that. Also, what drove this sell-off? Yes, it was the yen carry trade being unwound and a lot of hedge funds getting flat, shall we say, which is right, selling assets, covering their yen, for example. But when you get more volatility, there are other types of funds that will, in the industry, call them degross, meaning sell assets. And vol control funds are some of those. And they were big sellers as of late. So I wanted to dig into that because, once again, market structure in today's world is even more important than it's ever been, especially with these kind of bespoke, interesting funds that really move just based on the market moves. And they can exacerbate moves in both directions. So we'll look at that. And then lastly, target dated funds. A lot of 401k investors are shunning them for a different strategy. And we'll talk about why that might be. So that's what's on the docket for me. And for you, it's your voice bank questions. One is on SoFi Technologies and the other is on Warrior Met Coal. And of course, questions that came in via the comment section over on the YouTube channel and your live calls. That's what's most important during this hour. So don't hesitate to reach out at 888-99-CHART. Now we're heading into a short break. And on the other side, I will talk about today's market activity and take your questions on the Invest Talk Anytime listener line at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to or should I sell it.
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000 and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
So I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc.
does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a look at the market today. It was a very red day, but we did close well off the lows, but it was fairly broad-based sell-off. I mean, you had small caps down 2.82%, but the broad U.S. market was down a little bit less than 3%. If you're looking at the Morningstar style box from value to growth to large, mid, and small, everything was down anywhere between 2 1/3 to almost 3%. Okay, so there was nothing that was kind of spared. So don't feel bad if your portfolio was red. Everything was red. And this is what happens when you get forced selling. It's called correlation goes to one. And you sell what you can, not what you want to. And that was today. And typically those are days that gives you at least a short-term bottom. And it's usually indicated by the VIX. So the VIX did spike up to, what was the high today? 65.73. It did settle in at about 38.57. But that 65 number was the highest number on the VIX since COVID. Okay, COVID peaked out around 85. So this peaked out around 65. So over the last 20 years, the three most volatile markets have been the 08 financial crisis, COVID crash, and this one. But once again, this typically does mark at least a short-term bottom. Now, that doesn't mean that it has to hold here for this pullback, okay? What it probably does mean is you get a bounce. Now, you do get a bounce intraday. We closed about the middle of the range for the day, which is okay. We'll see what kind of follow-through we get to the upside or downside tomorrow. But we did hit our first support zone. If you watched my video over the weekend, I talked about how, you know, we were getting new support, but the major support was right around 51, between 51.25 and 50.75. And we hit a low today on the S&P at 51.19. So we got into that zone and got a little bit of a bounce. Pretty high volume. Once again, the VIX was spiking. So this is a scenario that should give you some sort of a bounce. How strong that will be, we shall see. Now, what I said in my video over the weekend, which you can find on our YouTube channel, is that I think we'll get a bounce soon, and then we'll make another low later in the quarter, maybe early fourth quarter, and that would set up for likely a fourth quarter rally. And the reason I say that is because, first of all, seasonality, positioning, the market was way offsides. It needed a break like this. But ultimately, when it comes to the broader economy, things, yes, the labor market is slowing. But really, if you look at restaurant traffic and lending, it's still pretty solid. Especially look at bank credit, for example. Remember, there are two main factors. And are there more dollars going into the system being created, or are they being taken out of the system? Now, number one is, are banks lending? That is always number one, because that's what 08 was, right? All the banks seized up, they stopped lending. That was a big deflationary bust. But if the banks are extending credit, that's putting more dollars in the system. They're the ones that actually produce most of the dollars in our economy. And so it actually inflected very negatively back a couple of years ago. Let's see, let me edit my, let's go to a 5-year chart here. Yeah, it went negative in July of last year. So a little over a year ago, bank credit was negative year over year. But as of March of this year, it turned positive year over year. So, and then if you're going to get Fed cutting cycle, that is also going to really ignite likely this bank credit cycle, positive bank credit cycle. So that's certainly something to watch. And then government surplus and deficit, they're another factor that could put more dollars into the system or not, as you saw during COVID. And the deficit this year is not growing dramatically. It's going to go from about 1.4 to 1.5 trillion, but still inflation adjusted, that is positive. And so you have those two main drivers of liquidity, of money going into the economy. And it's hard to see a major, you know, bear market, you know, 20, 25% drop in equities, unless you saw something nefarious or bad inflecting with those two numbers. So that's where we're at. I don't think this is the time to panic, but still could be better buying opportunities as the quarter goes along. Now we're heading into a break. Rob from Santa Clara, hang on. You'll be next on Invest Talk.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go talk to Rob in Santa Clara, looking at ADX, which is the Adams Diversified Equity Fund. Do you own it or looking to buy it, and what do you like about it?
Well, a couple things. I noticed the high was around 2250 in that area. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, with this market pullback, I was thinking, you know, if it gets down, 10-12%, that might be a good entry point. It pays, from what I gathered, close to a 6% dividend each year, you know, based on the monthly market price. And, it doesn't seem all that volatile. And I looked at their, holdings. They have some really nice holdings. I was just wondering, what you think of, kind of easing my way in to this particular stock.
Well, first off, it's not a stock, right? This is a fund. And it's a fund,
closed
right?
End fund, yeah.
Yeah, it's a closed end fund.
Right.
Now, the good thing I like about it, it's a lot of closed end funds, they operate with leverage, and that makes them very risky. Especially a lot of people chase the yield with bonds and a levered bond closed end fund, and a lot of those I don't like. But this doesn't have any leverage, but it's all U.S. equities. And if I look at the breakdown of the sectors, it looks a lot like the S&P, to be honest with you. It has a little more technology than the S&P, yeah, which I'm not a fan of, and a little bit less industrials. But besides that, right, the weighting is almost spot on. So they're obviously hugging the index in some way. Do you know how they're getting mm-hmm. that yield? Do you have any insight into their strategy? And because it looks so much like the S&P, like, where is that yield coming from? Are they selling cover calls? Do you know what, or are they only buying the dividend paying stocks? Do you know what it is?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
But from what I've researched, it seems like each year, especially at the end of the year, they give you a nice dividend, sometimes a dollar or more. Mm-hmm. And, they try to average 6% per year.
Yeah. So that's the thing here is it isn't a dividend. Okay. And a lot of people get confused with this because it's paying out a distribution. And a lot of people think that mm-hmm. all distributions are income, and that's not true. A lot of times they are capital gains distributions, and that's what these are. They're capital gains distributions. They did that in November of last year, and they'll likely do something like that again. Even the last dividend or last distribution, 35 cents was income and almost 9 cents was long-term capital gains. So from a tax perspective, this is not very tax efficient, and you're not getting your normal type of income that you're thinking. Okay. So I would not be buying this for the income. This is not, it looks too much like the index. If you want a distribution of the S&P, just buy that. It's going to be, and you can go buy an index fund that has much lower fees. Remember, this has a 61 basis point cost to it. And I think people are getting looped into the dividend. And as I always say, don't chase the yield. Chase good businesses, good portfolios of good businesses. And don't just look at this shiny dividend. Look underneath the surface. I don't see anything really special here. It's just an expensive way to get very similar exposure to the S&P. So just buy the S&P and forget about the dividend. The dividend shouldn't matter.
So you think just buying the S&P is...
Obviously, I don't love the makeup of the S&P because of, you know, very high tech weighting, a lot of overvalued names, market structure issues that you're seeing right now in the market. And this is just this looks a lot like it, right? The top holding is Microsoft and Apple, NVIDIA, Amazon, Alphabet, Meta, right? This looks a lot like the S&P. And sure, there's some differences, but I'd have to do a deeper dive on what they're doing here, because on the surface, just looking at these numbers, it doesn't jump out at me that this is anything special. So unless you can come at me with some sort of special thing they're doing that has some durable staying power to it, then I would just say buy the S&P if you want this type of allocation. Now, if you want income, you know, there are other better, more sustainable income portfolios, closed-end funds, mutual funds, ETFs, et cetera, out there than this one.
Well, I appreciate your input.
No problem.
One other quick question, if you have time.
Sure.
Do you think, you know, kind of putting some money in the next few days or weeks,
I think the market in general is going to go through a rougher period seasonally. August, September are seasonally weak. We came into this time period where there was overpositioning, especially in those Mag 7 AI stocks, and that's coming undone. We expected, we said this to clients in early July, that this would be a more volatile period. Where the ultimate bottom is, could this be it? Sure, it could be, but more likely it's later in the quarter. You know, the timing of that is never easy. Never, you know, no one's going to tell you, be able to tell you exactly with high confidence that this is the bottom. But, you know, I still think there's a bit more volatility over the next 2-3 months. Thanks for the call. Now we have to go to take a fast break, still to come, my main focus point. But next, we're going to talk to James from New York. So hang on, James. You are next on Invest Talk.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry, with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development, with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
Let's go talk to James in New York, looking at EQT, which is EQT Corporation in the oil and gas space. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
I own it. I've owned it for some time. I haven't really enjoyed much capital appreciation on it. It's under 3% of my portfolio, and I'm just thinking at these levels, might this be a good accumulation phase that might pay off later, long term?
Well, EQT is an independent E&P company, about a $18 billion market cap, and they mainly operate in the Appalachian Basin, shale plays in the Appalachian Basin, and they mainly produce natural gas. Natural gas is 94% of their production. And I think that's, you know, kind of the major issue is that natural gas just continues to plummet to new lows. And, you know, EQT is underperforming. And because of that, EQT is underperforming the broader space, the broader oil and gas industry. And so that's what worries me is, you know, we have some natural gas plays where they're holding up much, much better than this one. Have a better balance sheet than EQT. And so I just think you have better options out there, to be honest with you. We've looked at EQT amongst other oil names, and it's not a bad company. It's just, you know, kind of very middling in its quality of its balance sheet, its assets, its profitability, et cetera. So I would be actually looking to trade this out for a better quality name, once again, with better balance sheet, maybe a bit more diversity in their revenues as well. You know, being so tied to natural gas is very difficult. 94% of their production is in natural gas. So while I like adding to oil and gas plays down here, I would rather have a higher quality name that also has some oil exposure as well.
Okay, thank you much.
No problem. Thanks for the call. Now, my main focus point today concerns this story. 2024 average 401k balance by age. Have you saved enough? And this is a report from Vanguard, and they analyze millions of accounts, and they title the report, How America Saves. So let's take a look at some of the data. Now, the average 401k balance this year was $134,128, up from $112,572 last year in 2023. So pretty sizable increase, obviously, because equity balances are higher. Now, that is the average, well over $100,000. But the median, remember, the median is that middle account, not the average, the middle. And that is only $35,286. What it shows you is that there are some pretty big 401k accounts that are dragging up a lot of these very small 401k accounts. So what that tells you is either number one, people aren't saving enough, and that's certainly possible for some people. But number two, probably more commonly, is that they are abandoning their 401k, meaning they leave their job and they forget about it. That happens all the time. And it's the number one mistake people make with their finances. And we help them roll them over into an IRA. That's pretty much the number one choice you should almost always make 99% of the time. There are some one-offs, but 99% of the time, you should be rolling that into an IRA and opening up your investment options, et cetera. Okay. Now, according to this study, I'm going to list off the average 401k balance by different age groups. Now, under 25, $7,351, but the median is only $2,800. Between 25 and 34, $37,557, with the median just shy of $15,000. Between 35 and 44, $91,281. The median all the way down to $35,500. If you're 45 to 54, the average is $168,646, but the median all the way down to $60,763. You can see as you know you get older, there's some older people that have accumulated some really big balances, dragging this average up. Between the ages of 55 and 64, $244,750 on average, $87,571 is the median for that age bracket. Now, 65 and up, those that are typically on the brink of retirement or in retirement, $272,588 is their average balance. Now, that jump isn't as high because a lot of people continue to probably take money out. So that's where you're at. And the median on the 65 and up is only $88,500. Now, how do you think about this, okay, based on your age group? Now, if you're in your 20s, you have time on your side. lot of those people, right, 20 to 29, shall we say, you know, you probably only have roughly $10,000 or so in your 401k. That's okay. And you can say 403b, whatever type of retirement account we're talking about. But the point in that age bracket is just creating good habits. Is you haven't established your life, so you have a lot of other priorities. You're not in a super high tax bracket, most likely. So getting that tax deduction isn't as important. But it's the habit of putting money in and trying to get the full match, okay? Now, when you get into your 30s, that's when maybe you've built a little more comfort in your life, you have a little more flexibility, and you start to increase your contributions annually, hopefully along with a raise, so you don't feel it very much, right? Now, you get in 40 plus, that's when you aim to maximize your contributions, right? Getting that full employer match, obviously, like you should at any time, but take advantage of maybe the full amount you can put into your 401k. You might be in a higher tax bracket, hopefully, so you get that big write-off, and that's always great. And then you also start thinking about, from an investment perspective, what type of risk you should take. You know, you're not 20 anymore, so you know you don't have decades left, but you have maybe a decade or two until retirement, which means that maybe the risk tolerance should come down a little bit. And the same in your 50s, you know, that should probably come down a little bit more, depending on who you are, what your goals are, how long you're going to work for. But most importantly, in your 50s, it's catch-up contributions. You can put even more in your 401k and IRA in your 50s and beyond. And so starting with that is certainly very, very important. And that's also when you want to probably engage with a financial advisor of some type. That's kind of where most of our clients are in that 40 to 60. That reach out to us. Obviously, we've had a lot for many years and that are older, but the new clients are coming on board usually between that 40 and maybe 55 range to up to 60. And so that's when you can't just rely on the tools that the 401k is going to give you. You really want to reach out to somebody and develop a financial plan. We actually manage 401ks now as well, so that's super exciting. Where they're at, still making contributions, et cetera. So that's really cool. So if you ever want to engage with us on that, don't hesitate to reach out. So that's how you think about it from different age brackets. Now, based on income level, there are different numbers as well. So if you make over $150,000 or more, the average 401k balance is $336,470. But if you make less than $15,000, it's only $24,000, obviously. So you would imagine the more money you make, the more money you're able to put away. Now, based on men versus women, men average 401k balance $157,489, women $112,401. So certainly that fact that women make 86 cents on the dollar of every man, that's probably a contributing factor there. Now, and that's actually tougher because women need to typically live longer. They need more long-term care than men. And so they actually have tougher times developing a successful financial plan. Now, let's look at it based on industry. I thought that was interesting. The highest average balance by industry, agriculture, mining, and construction, 185,000. Finance, insurance, and real estate, just behind that, about 184,000. And then media, entertainment, and leisure, 178,000. And media entertainment has the highest median balance as well. So a lot more people have those higher balances there. So a pretty interesting study. I always like to look at those and give you a benchmark of where you are at. Right? Now let's keep things moving and play another listener question from 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Josh in North Carolina. Called with a question about a coal company I'm looking at, HCC, Hotel Charlie. It's one I've looked at the fundamentals. It looks okay. Just wondering if I wanted to add this to my portfolio. This is a particular coal that they mine that is very specific to high-quality steel. And I just wanted your opinion on it, if it was worth it to get in now. I've noticed the market today took a dive on a lot of these stocks, and just wondering if you like the company and what might be a good entry point. Enjoy the show. Thank you very much.
All right, looking at Warrior Met Coal. HCC is the symbol. $3 billion market cap, so small cap name, has pulled back recently with the overall market from the mid-70s now down to around $60 in change. And historically, you know, these type of companies, they have issues with getting good pricing on their product. But I'll take your word for it. But, you know, it sounds like they have higher quality coal that goes into especially metals. And remember, this is met coal, and that's there's thermal coal that's burned for energy. Met coal is burned to typically produce steel. And so if they have a better one, then I love that. Now, their profitability is very good, returning equity 22%. The five-year average is 29%. So I'm a fan of that. The technicals are good, making a series of higher highs and higher lows. They have net cash on their balance sheet. Enterprise value to EBITDA is only 4.2. That's very good. What are they doing with that cash flow? Are they buying back shares? No, they're actually issuing shares. I worry about that a little bit. But overall, I don't mind it, to be honest with you. The technicals are fairly solid. And, you know, this is an area where there's not a lot of love, but you can get some great values in areas like that. So I'm going to give HCC Warrior Met Coal a thumbs up. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends that our audio podcast is available in video form over on our YouTube channel, where we get questions submitted via the comment section. And this one came in from Widem Savad. ACMR looks very cheap. Am I missing something? ACMR. This is a name that has fallen from the mid-30s back in March. Now it's at 14 and change. So you're talking about down over 50%. But it is a small name. $930 million market cap, so sub a billion. Certainly a small cap. And its earnings were growing. They're up 96% last year, but this year is supposed to be down 4%. Now, what do? They manufacture and sell single wafer wet cleaning equipment and products for the semiconductor industry. Ah, there we go. So it's in the semiconductor equipment space. And obviously, this is very interesting that this is falling. And it fell well before the broader SMH. SMH is the ETF, semiconductor ETF, which peaked roughly a month ago. And, you know, this was maybe a leading indicator that that might be a problem in that industry. So I do worry a bit about the technicals are definitely poor. Return on equity is about 9%. Not great. Their balance sheet is solid. I like that. Their free cash flow is negative, though. -$1,030,000 on a $1 billion market cap. That's pretty bad. So yeah, I'm not a fan. The technicals don't look good and the growth is slowing and turning negative. So I'm passing on ACMR. It's definitely not a bargain. Okay. Now let's quickly play another question now.
Hi there, Duncan from New York. I'm actually going to talk about stock ticker SoFi, S-O-F-I. I'm part of a different service, kind of like a growth stock service, and I'm just kind of curious what your analysis is on them. From what I'm reading, from what they showed me, net revenue was about 20% year over year to $599 million. They used adjusted EBITDA, and I know that on the podcast you said that adjusted EBITDA should be the worst tool to look at, so I just wanted to confirm if that was still true. But I also just overall want to see what do you think the stock is? It definitely does seem like it's starting to head towards profitability, but I just want to know your 2 cents. Thank you very much and have a great day. Bye.
All right, looking at SoFi, and this is a name that peaked out in August of last year around $11. Actually, let me zoom out. Did it peak even higher than that? Well, it peaked out back in 2021 around $24, and then it rallied in late 2023. Peaked out, yeah, around $11 and change. Now we're at $6.54. And the issue here is, once again, it's a growth stock. It's growth at all costs. And, you know, I always question companies that haven't been around very long and are sponsoring stadiums. I think of SoFi Stadium here in Los Angeles. You know, new companies that do that, it's a red flag to me. It's a red flag. You haven't gone through different business cycles. You don't have the strength of a business to be wasting billions of dollars on some stadium rights. I just think it's just history says it's a bad sign. Okay. And look at the chart of this, just continues to go down and down and down. Yes, they're getting closer to profitability, but return equity is still negative. The free cash flow is still negative by $2.7 billion. Okay. And then if you look at shares outstanding, that continues to go up as well. You know, but 2021, there's about 800 million shares outstanding. Now we're approaching 1.1 billion. So the technicals are poor. The business is poor. Who cares if there's growth if it's not turning into profitability? You run from this name as quickly as you can. Okay. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and it's help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-CHART.
It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. Invest Talk. Call anytime. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. I was talking about stock Denison Mines, ticker symbol DNN. It's a uranium exploration and development company. They operate out of Canada. I just want to get your thoughts overall on the stock and what you thought of it. I already own a considerable amount, and with the recent dip, I'm thinking about adding more, and just do you think that's a good idea? Thanks.
All right, looking at Denison Mines, $1.4 billion market cap. It has pulled back, and it is into support. I have to say that. You know, it's about $1.50. It pulled back, peaked near $2.50 just a couple months ago. And the whole uranium space pulled back as well. Now, I do think it's more of a seasonal dip. And if you really like the name, you want to take a high risk. And that's what this is. It's a uranium miner that produces very little revenue. And it's a lot about big promises on the mines they're exploring as opposed to actual results. So that makes extremely high risk. I rather own the bigger companies. That's what we own for our clients. But it depends on what type of risk you want to take. If you want high risk, this is the name for you. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, let's talk a little bit about money flows. Money flows. And a lot of people, they try to chase the money. Meaning they read that, money was going into this asset class, or this big investor was buying this particular company. And they think that they are gaming the system by buying into that sector or those names. But there was a recent study, and basically it showed that if you don't get it in real time, you don't get that data, that inflow and outflow data in real time, there's no real edge that it gives you. Okay. Reacting to last month's flow numbers, which is typically what you're getting those a month or two after it actually happened. Okay. Now, the data showed that if you're looking at real-time numbers on large-cap stocks, when money's going in an average month, it returns 13.64%. In months where there's outflows from large-cap stocks, the average annualized return is 2.06%. So still positive, but a big difference, about 11.5% difference there. And on the small-cap side, it's even worse, mainly because of the lack of liquidity of some of those smaller names. But the average annualized return in the months where money is going into small caps, nearly 23%. In months where money is coming out of small caps, down 12%, negative 12%. So a 35% gulf in the small cap space. So not having access to real-time inflow of data is a big problem, especially for the average investor. Because if you look at the same data set, but just delay it a month, your average annual return by reacting to last month's data, if it was inflows, it would be 10.6%. This is on large caps. But if it's outflows a month ago, actually this month's return is 12.25% positive. So it's actually worse. You don't want to follow that. You actually want to fade that. You know, if a month ago money was coming out, you actually want to buy that more than sell it. Okay. So flows matter a lot for returns, especially in the short term. And so that's why you don't want to get in the habit of reacting to data that is just old. Even though it may, you know, a trend is your friend type of thing, but that's not always the case with inflow and outflow data, because there's sentiment shifts, there's news events that can cause people to pull money in and out. There's obviously economic impacts that could get people to move money in and out. And so if you're trying to follow the money, make sure that it's live, that it's real data, that it's not 30, 60 days old, because that doesn't really help if it is. Well, that about does it for this episode of Invest Talk. I thank you for tuning in and liking and subscribing to our YouTube channel. So don't hesitate to head over there. There's so much that you can glean from my weekly videos. Obviously, we share our charts on that when we analyze stocks, you'll see kind of the trends that I'm looking at. It's one piece of the data that we look at, but it's an important one. It gives you a good overview of what's happening with the company. So I'd really encourage you to head over to our YouTube channel and once again, subscribe there. Now, that about does it, like I said, for this episode of Invest Talk. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play, and be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.